Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
News not boobs! News not boobs! News not boobs!
It was a proper protest, like you'd see on TV.
Welcome to the Happy Place Book Club with me, Fern Cotton.
I was in shock.
Today, Killjoy by Jo Cheatham.
In the centre was a group of women who appeared to be leading the event. A woman with curly hair was shouting into a megaphone, next to some people holding a giant birthday card, covered in pictures cut out of newspapers. One side held all the photos of women taken from every tabloid paper for 6 weeks. The other side showed all the photos of men from the same newspapers. Across the top, it said, "Spot the difference." The women were naked, topless, or wearing underwear or bikinis. All so young. All with the same body type. Almost all of them were white. The men were footballers, cricketers, rugby players, politicians. They were wearing sports kits and suits. And none of them were bending over a chair, raising their eyebrows in a surprised manner and pouting. Not one of those blokes was suggestively licking an ice cream. None of them were stripped to the waist, covered in baby oil, and laughing at a beach ball. I scanned faces, but I couldn't see Lucy, Priya, or Max. But somewhere towards the back of the crowd was a woman dressed as a cup of tea. She was the only person in fancy dress. I felt for that woman. I wanted to tell her it was a good costume, really original and very well done. Was it papier-mâché? But she was busy shouting and pointing, so I just felt relieved I wasn't dressed as a tin of beans and started handing out the gingerbread. Two people asked me if the gingerbread men were vegan. Then somebody asked if they contained refined sugar. 10 minutes later, a woman asked if they were gluten-free. She also half-jokingly corrected me and said, "Gingerbread people." Part of me, quite a large part, wanted to throw the tin up in the air and make a noise like a wild boar. I didn't, though. I just smiled and got on with it, like a flight attendant handing out pretzels in a pocket of turbulence. Then a camera crew approached and asked if they could film me signing the birthday card. Everyone was scrawling messages around the pictures, saying why there should be no more page three.
Jo Cheatham was a long way from home, studying and working as a nanny in London, when she found out there was going to be a protest against page three in the Sun newspaper. She went along, her life and society was about to change. Killjoy is the story of Jo and the other utterly brilliant women who protested up and down the country, attended Parliament, made an unlikely group of friends, and ultimately got rid of page three. The book is warm, it's moving, it's blimmin' hilarious, and it really demonstrates the power of a grassroots campaign, what we can achieve if we shout a little bit louder. I love chatting to Jo because what's quickly evident is that Jo is the last person you think of when you think of an angry campaigner. She says that herself. She never thought driving societal change, tackling deep-rooted misogyny, was something she'd end up doing. But she did feel a low-lying rage that kept growing. And I think there's a lesson in there about really trusting our gut feelings and giving them a voice. Jo, it's so lovely to talk to you today, and I'm utterly thrilled that Killjoy is our book of the month in our Happy Place Book Club. We're absolutely thrilled to be reading this book along with our followers. So thank you, first of all, for writing it, because it's bloody brilliant.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm absolutely thrilled that you picked it, and I'm delighted to be talking to you.
Oh, I'm so glad. There's so much that myself and the other book club followers can sort of get stuck into theme-wise and
Discussion points are plenty. You and a group of amazing women managed to stop the page three, which many of us were overjoyed about. And this book tells the story of how you got involved in the campaign and to your amazing victory. Going back to the start of your own life, what were your thoughts and feelings of page three?
Well, at first, I remember first seeing it when I was a kid, and I just didn't understand why there was a naked woman in the paper, you know, and I remember thinking, well, isn't she a bit cold? And I'd draw clothes on her, you know, and put her a jumper on and everything. But, I mean, I grew up on a council estate in Rotherham, and everybody read The Sun. So I saw it every day. I saw it at home. My dad was a Sun reader. I saw it at school. You know, kids would bring it into school. Teachers would bring it into school. It was on public transport. It was even at the chip shop. You know, when you fish and chips would be wrapped in newspapers, so you'd sometimes get a topless woman with your chips. So it was part of daily life. And I saw it every day. And then when I became a teenager and, you know, street harassment became a thing, every day we'd walk to school and somebody would shout at us out of a car. And of course, the women on page three at the time, a lot of them were 16. They were our age and they were from my kind of background. You know, they were mainly working class girls. And I just think it probably wasn't the best idea in the world, considering the amount of kind of unwanted touching, unwanted comments that we got every day of our lives.
Yeah, it was reading that your thoughts around it growing up, much of it mirrored my own. And it's one of those things that maybe I hadn't taken the proper time to go, wow, that was utterly bizarre. And actually, how did that impact me? My dad was a sign writer for his whole career. He's a very gentle soul. He's a lovely, lovely man, but he worked with a bunch of blokes. And I remember going into their big warehouse where they worked, like a big sort of workshop, stinking of paint fumes. And there were page three pictures stuck on the wall. There'd be going to the little tea area and there'd be a calendar with a naked woman on it. And, you know, I would have been like 5, 6, 7, and it was all very normal. I think that was the worrying thing about it, the normalization of it. And the fact that, like you say, it was ubiquitous. Everywhere you turned, you had seen this imagery. And I think it impacted many of us in many ways. Like you say, perhaps leading to harassment or also comparing your own body to other women's. There's a whole myriad of things that will have impacted us from seeing those sorts of images. What I also found, I mean, the book is, I should also say, not only so brilliant and poignant and we get to really dissect the notion of the power of people, which I think is greatly underestimated. But also it's laugh out loud funny. I was howling with laughter reading this book. It's a real feel-good read as well. And what I loved is the journey you took from finding out about this campaign and sort of having your own thoughts about it to being at the forefront. Before the No More Page Three campaign, you had not dallied in activism whatsoever, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I barely even dared speak to anyone, Fern. Honestly, I was the kind of person that apologised about 500 times a day. You know, if somebody walked into me and knocked my bag off my shoulder, I go, oh, I'm so sorry. And, you know, I was so polite. I was so frightened of everything. I had a phobia of even having a photograph taken. You know, so the idea that I would have ever been involved in any kind of activism is still, to me, laughable. You know, I was the most unlikely person, and it did kind of happen by mistake. You know, it wasn't any kind of plan.
Tell us about this. So I think whether people have already read the book or they're about to, it's really worth you exploring this subject of how somebody who's never spoken up about anything before goes to being in a really active campaign. How did that accidental moment occur?
I think it's quite common amongst women to have a moment when you just lose it and you get so angry where there's like loads of bad stuff that's happening all at the same time. And I'd moved from Rotherham to London. I was going to university. I felt really out of place. Really, really. I felt so working class. And also, it was a time when I was getting loads of street harassment. You know, there were builders at the end of my road and they would shout at me every single morning like clockwork. And I remember just feeling this mountain kind of rage, actually. And that was there, but I wasn't doing anything about it because I did think, well, you know, we can't really do anything about any of this stuff. It's just part of daily life. You kind of just have to get on with it. And then I remember opening a newspaper and reading about this woman, Lucy Ann Holmes, who had set up the campaign to end page three. And it just kind of, there was some kind of little spark. And I just thought, huh, that's interesting. But, and there was a picture of her just standing on the street wearing a No More Page Three t-shirt. And I thought, I would never dare do that. I would never dare wear that kind of, you know, confrontational slogan t-shirt ever in public. And I just kept thinking about it. And then I saw that there was a post on Facebook and they were going to have a protest. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I'll just turn up at the protest, but kind of just like walk past it, you know, whilst drinking a coffee and just kind of see from a distance like what was going on. So I turned up and there were only three people there. So immediately I was kind of like dragged into it. And there were sort of people taking photographs. There was a press photographer. And there was three people and me. So I was kind of immediately dragged into the front line of this and given like a sign. And I was kind of completely by mistake part of this protest.
I mean, it's just the most brilliant initiation. And I love that sort of accidental, but perhaps very fateful moment. But of course, over time, you became such an instrumental part of this incredible group of women and also a beautiful friendship that was created as well. And you did really find your voice and you jolly well used it. And I think it's so important to get that message out there because there are tons of things that bother all of us, whether it's, you know, it could be a charitable scenario. It could be something happening very locally to you. It could be something in your kid's school. It could be something just globally you're not happy about. And I think most of us arrive very quickly at helplessness and we just go, there is nothing that I could do that could change anything. And that's obviously how you felt. I feel about it, about lots of different things that are going on in the world. I feel exactly the same. But actually, you've proved with this book that with the right people, the right mindset, a few little moments of luck thrown in for good measure in terms of timing, you can make a lot of noise. How surprising was that to you?
It's still surprising to me. And I forget this all the time and I have to remind myself of what's possible because all of us who were involved with the campaign were ordinary people. I mean, whatever an ordinary person is, we were that. You know, we had no experience of campaigning whatsoever. We were absolutely skint. We were all skint. We were all, you know, working multiple jobs, raising kids, looking after elderly parents, doing all this stuff and just kind of fitting in the campaign wherever we could. And the fact that we managed to succeed by just coming together and kind of really just giving it our best, even though we had no idea what we were doing, it just shows that if we could do that, anybody can pretty much do anything, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's so motivating. I was reading it going, oh, bloody hell. I'm sure, I could gather a few people here to sort this situation out or that. It makes you, it's extremely motivating knowing that it's absolutely possible. And you were taking down something that had been, as we said, very normalised and running perfectly well in its eyes for a very long time. And you've managed to change something that's positively affected many, many women out there, which is, it's such a joyful thing. On top of that feeling, knowing that you've done something on that level, so impactful, what else did the campaign bring you? You know, you've got that level of newness of, well, I've never done this before. But I know that obviously meeting those women and having that friendship has also given you a load of other gifts in life.
Completely. I can't bear to think what would have happened if I hadn't gone to that protest by mistake. Because I met my best friends, basically. And they're still the people, you know, that I love most and admire most. And I want their opinion on everything. And I want to impress them, you know, when there's someone who you really admire and you want to kind of make them proud. They're kind of my litmus test for everything I do. And we're still really close. And we've got this incredible sort of support network. And I think a lot of that is because when we first got involved, we planned everything via a Facebook group And we were scattered across the country. You know, we hadn't all met in person. So there was enough distance, I think, to be really honest in within these chats, because we didn't know each other. We didn't work together at first. You know, we were kind of strangers, and we jumped right in with these really deep conversations from the very beginning. And it meant that when we did meet in person, we had this bond that was kind of already there. And it was just natural that we were going to become really good friends because we'd already shared so much.
I really like that in the book, we get a flavour of those conversations, and you've kind of got each woman in there saying their piece and maybe offloading something or admitting something, or, you know, it felt like we shouldn't be reading it as the reader. And I really love that. It was a real insight into your blossoming friendships and relationships and how you navigated the hugeness of what you were trying to do. It's a lovely, lovely part of the book. How did you find the writing process, putting this mammoth story down on paper?
Oh, it was really hard. I went through so much self-sabotage writing this book.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Oh, I really did. All I ever wanted to do my whole life was write. You know, I've written every day of my life since I learned how to hold a pen. And I wanted to tell this story because I knew how special these women are and what an amazing thing we'd done together. So I did want to write it. But then it was just that thing, you know, here's something I really want to do. Now I'm going to do everything I can to not do it. And I mean, I had a lot of external stuff going on while I was writing it. Both of my parents were diagnosed with cancer. They both died. You know, I had to move to the other end of the country. Loads of stuff was going on. But also I really stopped myself from writing it a lot of the time. And I had to kind of push through all of this to actually get it down on paper.
Isn't it mad that we do that? I think everybody listening to this will have had one of those moments where we really want to do something and we become the block. We become our own worst enemy. And even starting, I think starting is probably the hardest bit with anything new, a new challenge you want to set yourself, a new goal, whatever it might be. We're in our own way. How did you eventually get out of your own way just to put your fingertips to your laptop keys? How did you get to that moment?
I did it because I had to, because I had deadlines.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more powerful than a really strict deadline to, you know, get you moving. But also I wanted to do justice to these people. You know, I wanted to try and do my best in describing what they're like and what they did and what we shared together. So every day that I wasn't really spending enough time trying to work out how to write this book, I felt like I was kind of betraying something, you know, in not doing it. It felt like I was actively shutting the door on all of that amazing stuff that we'd done. So, and I didn't want to do that.
And obviously, you know, you've had the most amazing response to the campaign itself, which just grew and grew in momentum. What's the response been like to the book, and how have you processed that?
Really good. And I was nervous because obviously we got a lot of fantastic support for the campaign, but there was a lot of sort of trolling and people who threatened us a lot and who were not happy at all with what we were doing. And I kind of expected quite a bit of that as well when the book came out. But I don't know if it's because times changed quite a lot. You know, things have changed a lot in the last 10 years. Or if, I don't know, I'm not on social media now, really for that reason, actually.
Yeah.
But it's been overwhelmingly positive. It's been lovely.
Well, of course, because it's a bloody brilliant book. And also, I was fascinated even reading the extracts in the book about the trolling. And I find it utterly weird. Why would you want to stop you brilliant women doing what you're doing? If you're that desperate to see a lady's tits, go on the internet.
Yeah, I know.
There's like loads of pictures everywhere. It's not like you're relying on the paper anymore for that hit. You can just go on the internet.
It's
what
as if it
hell?
Was a symbolic thing, wasn't it? You know?
Of course. Yeah.
It was expected that page three was going to be there. So to remove it, it felt like quite a big thing, I think.
Oh, it's just so brilliant what you've done. I'm grateful personally, because I was even thinking when I was reading the book, wow, I wonder how I would navigate if I was like, I don't know, sat on the train and someone had the paper next to me and I was with my kids taking them into town and the kids were like, oh, wow, what's that? What, like, how would I explain it? You know, I haven't had to go through that because of what you guys did. And that's huge. That's, you know, can you actually digest the weight of what you've done? Because it is a huge thing. And as you say, it's emblematic of so much. Can you actually process the fact that you, with your mates, have done this?
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, I feel like a complete idiot almost every hour of every day. Honestly, I've never sat down and thought, oh, I'm really proud of that, actually. Maybe it'll take a bit more time. I don't know. But that's a really nice thing to say. And no, I haven't thought of that.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. Knowing the power of people and the power of communicating with other people and building momentum, would you take on another cause? Are you sort of seeing yourself moving towards other areas where you could put this sort of activism into play?
Maybe, but the thing about the campaign was that, as I said, you know, none of us had any experience. We weren't activists and we didn't plan on it, really. It kind of happened, as I said, sort of by mistake, in this kind of organic way. And I think the power of it was that we weren't kind of professional campaigners. I think a lot of people think that to be an activist is a job, you know, and you've got the Gretas and the Malalas and these phenomenal people who make all the change happen. But actually, we were just completely ordinary people. And I think if everybody just did one thing, you know, whether it is to chase down Rupert Murdoch, which, you know, is probably easier now, he's a bit older. Or, as you said, do something at your kid's school, whatever it is.
Yeah.
If we all just did one thing, it would change everything. So, I mean, it is possible that we'll end up doing something else. It's definitely possible. But also, if we don't, I think that's enough. I do think it's enough for people to just have a go at one thing.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I think it's such a brilliant answer. And it is, again, really important for us to understand that if we've got an idea and we really feel strongly against something, it's always worth standing up and saying your piece if you can. It's always, even if it feels shit scary, which it always will. And if you can find like-minded people who want to stand there with you for support and for encouragement, even better. But I think your book has totally motivated me in that way, that, okay, this feels impossible, I feel helpless, but read Jo's book. Like, it's all in there. And as I said at the start of this, it's hilariously funny. It's so beautifully written. It was just an absolute joy to read. So a huge congratulations. And I can't wait for the Happy Place Book Club followers to all get stuck in reading it too. So Jo, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, Fern, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you.
Jo, I found that so interesting that self-sabotage almost got in the way of you writing that book. Thank heavens you did write it in the end, because that is a story we all need to hear. The book is called Killjoy and it comes incredibly highly recommended by me and by you guys too. Jessie commented on Instagram at Happy Place Book Club saying, "This book is such a great read. I'm loving how the story's told and also learning a lot at the same time. Killjoy made Lisa really angry and sad, but also made me laugh out loud. Such a fantastic read and with messages that are just as important today." Well, look, thank you, Jessie and Lisa, and every single one of you who've been reading along with us over at the Happy Place Book Club. We're in April now, and this month's book club read is The List of Suspicious Things by Jenny Godfrey. Have you read it? If not, or if you have, this is going to be a good month for all of us. This is a gorgeous coming-of-age story through the lens of a 13-year-old girl's search for the Yorkshire Ripper. Miv is terrified that her dad wants to move her down south because of the murders, so she figures if she can solve the case of the disappearing women herself, the family could stay in Yorkshire. The thing is, their search reveals more secrets than they thought possible. Have you started reading yet? What are you making of it? I'll be chatting to Jenny on the show in a few weeks, and I would love it if you sent me a voice note. DM us on at Happy Place Book Club, and you could be on the next book club episode, or jot down all your thoughts in a little comment.
Get involved. We're at Happy Place Book Club on Instagram. That's where all the chat is happening. And I know this book is already hugely popular, so hopefully there's going to be lots of chat about it. Until next time, a huge thank you again to Joe, to the producer, Anushka Tate at Happy Place Studios, and to you. I love you, bookworms.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.